Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we finally have new legislation authorizing the FAA, and there are some wins in it for consumers. Plus, we have an update on the new on a new phone hacking scam travelers are struggling with.
Mark is broadcasting live from Ashland, Oregon, folks. And at 3:20, we'll find out a little bit about what tourists do in Ashland. That is, of course, besides the famous Shakespeare Festival.
Ashland is the home of longtime consumer advocate, travel writer, and Travel Guys guest Ed Perkins. Ed joins me live at 3:35. We'll talk about that new travel bill and offer you some great travel tips, including how to avoid pickpockets. It's pickpocketing season in summer, all to make you a smarter traveler.
Well, it's a scorcher here in Sacramento, California State Fair wrapping up right around the corner. Thank you for taking some time out of your day and joining us here on the Travel Guys.
Road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man, king of the road, riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone. It is the Travel Guys every Sunday, 3 to 4. Find out all about the show and follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano here with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as I mentioned at the top, I'm here in the studio. Mark is in Ashland, Oregon, sitting alongside our old buddy Ed Perkins. Mark, ahoy there, matey.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Thomas. I am here at the Ashland Hills Inn, which is one of Ashland's older properties. It's had several lives, and dare I say that this one is better than its last one. The hotel's in really good shape, and it's really, they got a beautiful little restaurant downstairs that Ed and I just had a nice lunch in. So, and with the help of United Airlines, I might actually make it back to Sacramento, spend a day and a half in Portland. You know how I feel about Portland.
You love it up there. There's a nice photo on TravelGuysRadio.com of looks like downtown Ashland. Lots of trees, lots of color. Looks like a fun place to hang out. And Mark, when you flew out of Sacramento, Southwest was having kind of a bumpy week there. What did you observe? I understand you took Alaska Airlines to your destination.
To Medford today, but no, I flew Southwest on Friday evening, and it was a long week for the Southwest folks. After those computers blew up on Tuesday morning. And I sensed by Friday afternoon that they were all kind of a little bit frazzled, that people had, I was telling it, I had a flight crew, I had three flight attendants on my flight, none of whom thought they were going to be on that flight. One thought she was going to be on her way home to Chicago, and one thought her day was going to end in LA a lot earlier, and one thought she was headed south from Sacramento instead of north. But one thing I kind of observed was that it seemed as though the Southwest customers perhaps cut their airline a little bit more slack than customers from United, Delta, or American would have done under similar circumstances. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but when you get into a bad situation like that, and most of the Southwest flights, even by Friday night, were still delayed 2 or 3 hours, so people are missing connections, and their vacations are getting messed up, and they've got kids and all their junk with them, and it's a bad time for something to go wrong. But everybody seemed like they were trying to do their best, and I kind of sensed from the people who were traveling on the airline that they were acknowledging that, and while they weren't happy, that they were willing to cut them some slack. And when the situation is that icky, if the customers will kind of keep a lid on things, it makes it a lot easier to get things done. So people, by in essence cutting the airline some slack, allowed them to function, to get back to full functioning a little faster. And I met a flight from Sacramento this morning with some Sports Leisure travelers on it from Sacramento that only had about 45 people on it. So dare I say, Southwest is back to normal today all over the country. Looking at the board in Portland, the flights are pretty much back on time. But that was a big mess. A big mess.
Big story, big travel news story throughout the week, and there are certainly a lot of other things going on in the travel news. So with that being said, let's do it. Mark, what do you got for today's travel news?
Well, in the travel news, Thomas here, American Airlines has been kind of leaning on their customers all summer long. Of course, American was the last of the big three to go to the revenue-based frequent flyer program after United and Delta had done that in previous years. So American travelers next year will earn miles based on how much money they they spend instead of how far they travel. Some other bad news for Advantage members, that's American's frequent flyer program, they have cut the earning rates on some of their partner airlines. So for some of you who thought that, gee, I can fly on one of American's partners and still earn a lot of miles, that's going to be a little bit more difficult now. So all the frequent flyer geeks who try to figure out, you know, the way around things, this was the way around things, but it isn't the way around things no more. Ouch. And from Rio comes the word that hotels are kind of in short supply in Rio. And then comes word today from one of the Olympic committees, and I'm forgetting from which country now, has told their people to move out of the accommodations they moved into because they have no plumbing and no running water. So, the joy of Olympics in Brazil. I think we're about to find out.
Well, you can just sit around and wait for all of those that were all the Russians that thought that they were going to compete, and or people that were going to stay, and then you can have their room.
There you go. If you're going to the Olympics, this is be a smart traveler. Reconfirm all of your arrangements before you ever leave home. Make absolutely certain, particularly if you're staying in an independent hotel property or you're not in the Marriott or the Sheraton or the Best Western or something like that, make sure that everything is in order before you leave. Heaven forbid that you would get all the way to another hemisphere and have no place to stay, because it looks like that hotels may be in fairly short supply down there. I mentioned in the headlines that there's a new travel scam that hacks directly into your telephone. And Tom, this one's kind of a little bit scary, and I'm not really sure exactly how people deal with this. What's happening is that some of the free charging stations mm-hmm. that are being set up in public places are not free charging stations at all. What's happening is you're plugging your phone into that. The phone is serving, the charging port is serving as a data port, and basically somebody can get in and download just about anything out of your telephone.
Oh, no. Where has any word on where this kind of thing has been happening?
Well, it popped up a couple of times, a couple places in Europe, and it popped up outside at one of the terminals at Kennedy Airport. So this report, let's see if I can see who is talking about this little thing here. Gentleman says that he recommends plugging your laptop in to charge your phone if you're traveling with one and don't have an external charger, that you can use your computer to charge your phone, which is good. And if you find yourself always low on low battery and relying on public charging stations, there are products out there that will protect your phone data while charging in public spots. I don't know what those things are, but we'll do some homework on that.
There you go.
Try to find out. But in the meantime, if you are using public charging stations, try to take a look around and make sure that you're using one that was put there by somebody that has your best intentions in mind. Otherwise, you may find that you have just hooked somebody up to your cell phone. Sadly, I want to make an announcement here that has to do with travel around Sacramento. John Holloway was a very good has been a guest on our program many times, a good friend of the Travel Guys. And John's store closed in January, and it has not reopened. It's not going to reopen. And folks ask me from time to time about John and about the store. And unfortunately, he moved into a bigger store, and the sales didn't come with it. And there were a lot of overruns for construction and getting into his new place that led him not to be able to survive a not as good of Christmas season as he has predicted. So Sacramento's only unique travel store has gone away, and there is probably no possibility of it coming back, at least in the form that it used to exist in the foreseeable future. So.
But Mark, let me ask you, does he still have his online store available?
No, he's not available online or offline. So, however, we have secured the names of the baggage of the folks that the luggage that John used to sell, Briggs and Riley, and some of them. And we are going to post those on travelguysradio.com so that if you have an issue with luggage that you've purchased, even if you didn't buy it from John, we will have a list of all the folks that you can contact to get your luggage fixed. Because a lot of those folks, the luggage is, you know, lifetime, and they'll fix it for you forever. It's kind of like less Schwab for luggage, if you will.
There you go.
All right, one more quick item here on the news. 5 places you should never play Pokemon Go.
Okay.
You know, this is the new thing. Do not go to memorials.
All right.
Particularly sites like the 9/11 Memorial and the Vietnam Wall are somewhat cause for concern. It's considered to be very poor form to be playing video games at those places. Don't go to cemeteries would be the second on the list of 5. museums. The Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. has already spoken out about the game after players were congregating outside. But it's as a rule of thumb, it's best to keep the game put away when you're visiting museums. And this would probably seem like logic to most people, but don't go near cliffs and sheer drops, because we've already had four people that we know of who have gone over cliffs playing this game. And finally, hiking trails. This little article was the five places. When catching Pokemon, it's best not to wander too far from civilization. You never know when your search for digital monsters will lead to a 100% real and dangerous animal. Five tips of places you should never play Pokemon Go from the folks at Smarter Travel, and that is your travel news for today.
I can see it now on the America's Funniest Videos will be Pokemon disasters, I guarantee.
I have driven, Chom, twice in the last week. I have been driving down the highway, the freeway, in Sacramento, past someone, a male in both cases, driving probably 50 miles an hour, barely staying in the lane, with the cell phone up above the steering wheel. I don't know that that's what they were playing Pokemon, but I'm going to guess that since this is the phenomenon, folks, I have to just one thing to say. Please, for the sake of the rest of us, when you're driving down the road, please, could you maybe not play the video game? It's just a thought. I mean, we might all get there safer.
Well, good point. I'm right along with you there, Mark. Absolutely not. Okay, let's. When we come back from the break, Mark is broadcasting from Ashland. I'm here in the studio, and Mark will be joined by some special guests, and we'll talk about not only the Shakespeare Festival, which is big, and the home of his right there in Ashland, but other things to do in that area. And that's right here on the Travel Guys coming up next. I was born a rambling man. That's why I joined Mark on the Travel Guys, and now I'm a travel guy. However, I'm a travel guy, not traveling, but sitting in the studio. Mark is in Ashland, Oregon. He is the travel guy today. And Mark, a happy day after National Hot Dog Day. I was looking on our website here at travelguysradio.com. Item number 2 under headlines is America's Best Hot Dogs. And you can drill into that particular spot there and find out where the great hot dogs are on road food.
Because at travelguysradio.com, you can not only find all the stuff associated with the program, but you can always find one or two weird things that don't have anything to do with the program, like America's Best Hot Dogs.
There you go.
Or 6 reasons why your hotel key stops working.
I had 2 of those world's greatest hot dogs just across the street with my final visit to the California State Fair. Always good dogs over there.
So it only costs you, what, $20 for your hot dog?
I don't count. I just, yeah. You know.
Did you get one of the deep-fried Twinkies, too, or were you cutting back this year?
You know, I had a deep-fried Oreo that my son-in-law, who likes that stuff, they come in a six-pack. And you know what? You know, when somebody just, like, holds it out in front of you and there's, like, 6, and they say, would you like to try one? It's hard to resist, and it was actually extremely good.
Well, it's bad form to turn down a deep-fried Oreo.
I agree.
It's bad courtesy. All right, let's roll here with my Ashland folks. Speaking of deep-fried Oreos, because Ashland is kind of a deep-fried Oreo sort of community. We were talking about how Ashland is kind of a miniature Portland, and that Ashland is really a big destination for people from Northern California. With me is Dana Preston-Tom. She is with the Ashland Chamber of Commerce, and Eddie Wallace is here. He's with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Dana, when folks from Northern California, mm-hmm. and I got to believe there's a lot of them, come
Absolutely.
Up here to Ashland, to Southern Oregon, besides going to Eddie's place to see the shows, what do they do?
Wow. Well, gosh, there's just so much to do here in Ashland for people who want to come up and visit. There is a thriving art gallery scene in Ashland for people to check out, different art galleries, restaurants, brew pubs, wineries. We were just recognized.
See, Tom, I told you this was a miniature Portland.
There you go.
We were just recognized internationally for our wine scene down here in Southern Oregon, Ashland specifically.
Wineries are popping up all over the
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's we're a great destination launch point into this wonderful region for wine, actually.
So it's For folks who are, are there a lot of hiking trails and things to do outdoors here? I mean, I know you've got the Rogue River not too far up the road.
Yes. So if you want to spend some time outdoors, we have opportunities for cycling, whether you're an adventure cyclist, mountain biker, adventure cyclist on the roads, to just being another great way to get around our town and see everything that there is to see. It's a great way to
wide
do
variety
it.
Of accommodations in Ashland. Yep. Always have been. If you want to stay, if the Shakespeare Festival is going on and you want to stay close to it, the closer you are to the festival, the more you will pay generally for
certainly,
your hotel room.
Yeah.
If you're willing to stay out here by the freeway, by the Ashland Hills, and then sometimes it's a little bit less. Besides the Shakespeare Festival, which runs basically now eight, nine months out of the year. And of course, you guys do a wonderful thing at Christmas time up here.
Yeah,
tell folks
I
do. A little bit about what happens at Christmas.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. You know, that's our Festival of Light celebration. And the Ashland Chamber actually first created it about 25 years ago. It's the day after Thanksgiving. We do a Santa's parade where we have people at 5 o'clock in the evening come down for a really fun, family-friendly parade, and then Santa greets everyone, and then we light the town with over 1 million light bulbs and really kick off the holiday shopping season, encouraging people to shop local here. So.
Wow. This is really a growing community, and we talk about how Ashland and Medford are kind of different places. I mean, very different places. So whatever you're looking for, if you want a casual campground, or if you're a young person and you just want to kind of bum around, or if you're an older person and you got to have a hotel room, then it's pretty much here.
Absolutely. Everything. I mean, from the accommodation standpoint, what you were talking about, we have really nice bed and breakfasts as well to accommodate anyone who's looking to come. And then we have, like you were saying, campgrounds for people who want to come too. So that there's a very wide range in Ashland specifically in our
region.
Plus,
one of my favorite places in the whole world is in this area. And if I didn't, it's not in Ashland, but if I didn't give a shout out to them, I would be negligent. Harry and David's.
Oh, absolutely.
If you really want, if it's kind of like Whole Foods. You know, it's not inexpensive. Nothing at Harry and David. They've never been accused of being inexpensive at Harry and David's.
No, I don't think so.
But then again, the quality of everything that you buy there is so amazing. I mean, even if I just only ate the pears from Harry and David's, it would be amazing. Dana, before I let you go, anything big coming up this summer still in Ashland or anything this fall that's new or different? I know we have the Chocolate Festival here in the spring.
Yeah, the Film Festival, of course, in the spring as well. And the Film Festival has a fun little week that they do in the fall as well. So that's something fun that's coming up. I would invite people, especially during the summer, we just had a great scenic bikeway designated in Ashland. So if you're looking to get a really long ride in, there's a brand new opportunity here in Southern Oregon too.
So folks want some information on Ashland, they go to
Ashland Chamber or travelashland.org.
Travelashland.org. Thank you, Dana, for coming by and talking to us a little bit today. And we're going to shift to Eddie, who is, you know, we were talking, Ed and I were talking before we went on the air about wondering if anybody knew what the economic impact of the Shakespeare Festival is on this community. Have you ever seen any numbers like that?
Yeah, we run numbers every year, Mark, and of course I don't have them in front of me right now, but it is...
Nothing like putting somebody on the spot. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and having to follow Dana, my goodness.
Exactly.
It's a huge impact on the community, and fully 40% of our visitors do come from California, and the majority of them are from the Bay Area and then northward, including Sacramento. So we are hugely dependent on our California visitors to keep the theater seats full and the shops full and the Ashland economy humming. So we hope that people are intrigued enough to come pay a visit if they haven't been.
How long has the Shakespeare Festival been here?
It's been here for 81 years, since 1935.
How did it start?
It started when a gentleman named Angus Bomer, there was something called the Chautauqua Circuit back
then. This explains why we have a Bomer Theater.
Yes, that's right. Yes, and a Chautauqua Circle and a Chautauqua Walk. That was a summer circuit that people like John Philip Sousa did around the country in the summers, and there was a shell of a theater where people performed, and Angus Bomer thought, what a great place to do Shakespeare. He was a Shakespeare scholar, and he taught at the local college. So 1935, July 4th weekend, three performances, two plays, Twelfth Night and Merchant of Venice. And fast forward 81 years, we perform 9.5 months a year, over 700 performances a year, 11 plays, three theaters. It's big business.
If you haven't figured out, you're listening to The Travel Guys, and we're broadcasting live from Ashland, Oregon today. We're talking with Eddie Wallace, who is with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and just talking about some of, I did not know that that went back 80 years.
Yeah.
I guess I probably have heard that story somewhere along the road, but 80 years.
Yeah. It's, well, it's an institution.
And the festival is more than just Shakespeare. We
yes. Thank you, Mark. Thank you. There's a certain amount of myth busting we have to do every year when we try and get new folks here. First, we do perform 8.5 months a year. We have 11 plays.
So it's not just in the summer.
Not just in the summer. Late February through late October. One 1,200 seat outdoor theater, two smaller indoor theaters, huge for school groups all along the West Coast. We have what's called a shoulder season in spring and fall, which are kind of like the best kept secrets almost in terms of great times to visit Ashland in addition to the summer.
Well, you don't have to pay the hotel rates or much.
That's right. Absolutely.
And some for folks who don't necessarily, you know, not everybody who enjoys the arts or the theater enjoys Shakespeare.
That's right.
I'm waiting for the show to get here. Something Rotten to come.
Oh, I'm dying to see that.
Because it's of course, if you don't know, if listeners don't know, Something Rotten, the premise of it is that it's two guys back in the day as Shakespeare, and they're trying to get a little attention, and Shakespeare's getting all the headlines.
That's right.
So they write the first ever musical, and it doesn't turn out well, and it goes from there. But when I saw that show, I thought to myself, how awesome would that be if it ever played in Africa?
Oh, I hope the rights become available someday, because it would just be perfect.
Got to be. How's the season going so far this year?
Really, really well. And as you said, we have six titles that are not Shakespeare, if Shakespeare's not your cup of tea. We have Great Expectations by Dickens. We have The Wiz, the musical The Wiz, playing outdoors. We have some world premieres that are filling the houses and are among some of our biggest hits of the season. But we also have Hamlet outdoors. We have a great production of Twelfth Night and Richard II, if you're a history buff.
What's it cost to see a show up here?
It starts at $30, okay, and it can go up to $110. So we always recommend, if budget is an issue, to book as early as possible, preferably in November, December for the following year.
Thank you, Eddie, and thank you, Dana, for stopping by today and giving
thank
us a
you.
Little bit of an Ashland shot here back to the folks in Sacramento. When we come back after the news, Ed Perkins is going to join me here, and we are going to make you a smarter traveler. We're going to tell you how to avoid being pickpocketed. We're going to tell you about some of the good things that have come out of the Federal Aviation Industry's reauthorization bill and more when the Travel Guys come back after the news on News Radio KFBK.
You can travel by road. You can fly. You can take a ride on this one and only train. We can travel, you and me, over land and sea. We'll get to see the sunrise.
Our Australian star, Marcus Mio, and finger snapping there in the background was me. We're the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm in the studio. Mark is live from Ashland, Oregon, sitting alongside him, Ed Perkins, one of our favorite Travel Guys guests. Ed, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
I was looking on our website, and we have a thing about, favorite snacks to take on board on the plane. What's your favorite onboard snack, Ed?
Well, in the first place, I do not carry anything to eat onto airplanes. I figured I'll be getting enough that I'd rather eat real food either before or after my flight.
There you go. All right. Welcome to the Travel Guys. Mark, are you with us?
I am.
There you go.
I am. We are just here. We're just having so much fun shooting the breeze here. Is there a breeze in Sacramento today? It's about 140 there?
Yeah, it's about 104, 105. There is a kind of a warm breeze, not doing any good to cool anybody down. This is one of those heat stroke days. Everybody better stay hydrated. How's the weather there in Ashland today?
Well, it's kind of warm up here. It's going to be warmer. As it gets warmer in Sacramento, it gets warmer in Ashland. Yeah, that breeze that you're feeling, Tom, that's the breeze caused by when people keel over from heat stroke.
It's there you go.
Breeze that's caused there. So, Ed, Ed and I have had lunch together. We've been talking, as you might imagine. We're two old travel guys, and I've kind of known Ed vicariously through his writing for all of these years. And I knew as soon as I read his stuff the first time that he was kind of on the side of the consumer and not on the people who impose all this stuff on us. Ed, I want to talk to you about the new FAA authorization. It's kind of, talking about congressional legislation isn't always sexy on the radio, but we've kind of kept this in front of our listeners because we're trying to help them understand that this is where positive things happen.
Yes, and I think sort of to everybody's surprise, getting something positive through this Congress has not been easy, and a lot of people thought it would never happen. But it did, and the FAA reauthorization bill, which has been approved now by both the House and the Senate, calls for some important consumer benefits.
Now, it talks about one of the things, and some of these things seem like stupid little things, but it seems to me like that when you pay somebody to handle your luggage and your luggage doesn't show up, it seems like you should get a refund.
Exactly. And the new bill says that if the airline doesn't get your baggage to you within 12 hours of arrival or 15 hours on an international flight, that the airline has to refund your baggage fee. Uh-huh. Now, to me, that's great. I'm glad they did it. Ideally, the rule should apply if they don't get your bag within an hour of the time you arrive. In other words, while you're still at the airport, then you should get your fee refunded. But come on, we take what we can get. And getting a refund 12 to 15 hours later is better than nothing.
Well, and it Alaska, of course, has had for a while a rule that if your bag wasn't delivered in 20 minutes, that they were given a refund, but now they give you miles or a coupon good for a discount on your next flight, but which I think is important. At least somebody is being held accountable.
That's right. And, of course, that's just one of the many reasons that Alaska Airlines has got such a great reputation for customer service and for being one of the best U.S. airlines.
Now, Alaska recently bought Virgin America Airlines, and something you and I were talking about before, and about how that's all going to shake out, because while there are two airlines that are kind of known for better quality, a higher level of customer service, the product that they produce and how they produce it is very different.
Yes, and Virgin America has been somewhere in between Alaska and JetBlue. Now, by objective measures, JetBlue has the best product in the market, but people love Virgin's product, and I think Alaska would be very foolish to throw away that tremendous customer loyalty that Virgin America has acquired.
Well, and Alaska has, in their own right, gotten their own loyalty, too. I mean, Alaska practically owns the Pacific Northwest, and now you can fly from Seattle and Portland to a lot of cities in the country. In fact, as a tour operator, we consider Alaska as one of the possibilities. If you're going to fly an hour south to Los Angeles to go east, you might as well fly an hour north to Portland to go east.
Exactly.
So, especially considering the fact that the Portland airport is, people just don't say it's the best airport in the country. It is the best airport in the country.
Agreed.
For a lot of reasons. Places to eat, room to move around, all those kinds of things. What else happened in this consumer bill besides the luggage thing?
Well, another very important consumer benefit is that when a family is traveling together, they no longer have to shell out seat assignment fees in order to be guaranteed the ability to sit together, that the children have to be seated with the parents. And, I mean, talk about a no-brainer. The airlines always whine about re-regulation when something like this comes up. But the fact remains that they must have had the world's greatest tin ear not to realize this was a problem and to do something about it before the government came in and said, you got to do something about it.
Well, and I'm not a big fan of huge government regulation, but sometimes somebody has to come along with a croquet mallet or something and hit them alongside the head and get their attention and help them understand that, because oftentimes when we deal with airlines, logic isn't a part of the conversation. and that's a shame, because there are people who work for airlines who would love to let logic apply in some situations, but the system won't let them.
That's right. And unfortunately, all too often, the airline's response to customer complaints about this sort of thing mm-hmm. has channeled Marie Antoinette, let them buy expensive tickets.
What did we not get in this bill?
Really?
The one thing that I think a lot of people were looking for were minimum seating standards in coach, that the seats have become narrower and the legroom has become less. And people, I think, are justifiably worried about the safety implications of, can people get out of an airplane that crowded within the requisite 90 seconds if it lands safe, intact, a survivable crash, but there's fire? And nobody's tested this, really. They don't test it. They use computer simulations. So a lot of people are hoping for that. But the question there is, and part of this is on consumers.
Right.
I mean, consumers have demonstrated that they will put up with the lousiest product you can imagine if it knocks a few bucks off the airfare.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
So fewer seats in an airplane means higher costs.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that one's going to go.
But that's something that we didn't get. Ed Perkins is our guest. We are broadcasting the Travel Guys live from Ashland, Oregon. Actually, I'm in Ashland. Tom's in Sacramento. And Tom,
I am, yes.
I understand we have a caller on the line there. Oh, we lost him. Oh, bummer.
Well, he'll probably call back. I think he started to get stale there. I have to ask, you know, both of you guys, I have a feeling that when it comes to, you know, consumers complaining about whatever product it may be, you know, whether it's rental car rentals or the service that you get in a restaurant or a hotel, people seem to be, you know, feel more empowered or more knowledgeable or whatever to complain about these other kind of services. When it comes to the service with the airlines, because they're such a, it's such a big, such a big business, and it's so something that people really don't know much about, feel less, you know, empowered to complain or raise their arm in the air and say, how about some more leg room?
How do people complain, Ed, and get about the airlines and get something and really have somebody hear them?
They probably get somebody to hear them. I understand that most airlines monitor Facebook accounts and Twitter and various websites. The problem that really exists in the airline business, unlike, say, the case of hotels, is that for much of the country, the skies are dominated by three giant companies that pretty much operate in lockstep. And you can say to a United, the service is so lousy, I'm never going to fly you again. Choose American the next time and you get the same darn problem because they're all doing exactly the same thing. And I think that's the reason that Virgin American and JetBlue and Alaska have got such good reputations, because they do a little different. But the problem is they don't go everywhere.
Yeah.
So all too often it doesn't make any difference if you the idea of you can vote with your feet doesn't really work as well with the airline business as it does with most others.
It doesn't. And you're lucky here. You're a secondary city here in the Ashland-Medford market that you have more than one air carrier. But in many markets now, because of the mergers and stuff, a lot of people are left with only one airline flying only one city.
That's right.
And so they're going to, if you don't like the fare, it's like too bad. There aren't any more choices. The airlines, of course, told us this would never happen with the mergers, but smarter people knew otherwise. Ed, we need to take a little sidebar here just for a minute. We have a guest on the line. A few weeks ago, we talked about the air show in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and about how it was. And Ed, you were telling me about how much you know about this show.
Oh yeah, it's world famous, focused on small and experimental airplanes.
Tom, why don't you introduce our caller here and get him on the line with us, if you would.
Okay, from Oshkosh, or not exactly, our special guest on the phone. I'm sorry, I forgot his name already, Mark, because I don't have it in front of me.
Get him up on the phone here. We got it all going on.
Okay, he's there. Hello there.
Hi, this is Dennis.
Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, I live in Sacramento. I went to Oshkosh a while back. Oshkosh, Wisconsin, is actually the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association. And they have a museum there. There's lots to see. But once a year, for a week, there's the Oshkosh, it's called Air Venture, and 540,000 people show up for this thing. They have 10,000 aircraft land there. It's just huge.
My gosh.
They have a flea market. It takes 2 days to go through that. But they don't call it a flea market. They call it a fly market.
Do you go to the on an annual basis?
No, I've just been there once, but for me, once is enough. I mean, there was just so much to see. It was just amazing.
How many days?
For a week.
A whole week?
Yeah.
Wow, a whole week.
Actually, this year starts tomorrow, July 25th to the 31st. And it's a little bit short notice, but, put it on your calendar for next year.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Dennis, thank you for sharing a little bit about the air show. Dennis was going to be on with us a couple weeks ago, Thomas, and then we got bumped and all that kind of stuff. So Dennis has been the most persistent contributor to the Travel Guys for a long time. Thanks, Dennis, for your call today. We appreciate it.
Sure thing.
All right. Thomas, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back, and Ed's going to give our listeners a little bit of his wisdom. He's an international traveler about how to keep somebody from reaching their hand down into your pocket.
Now, to avoid the pickpocketers, that's next with Ed Ashland. Well, Ed Ashland, did I say that? Ed Perkins and Mark Hoffman from Ashland, right here on The Travel Guys. Thanks for tuning in. It's TG. Not DNC or RNC. TG stands for Travel Guys. We got acronyms, and yet everything's turning into initials. You ever notice that?
Yes. Well, we had one political party carried on last week, and the other political party will carry on this week, and then the country will carry on after that.
I think is
what happens.
We're the Travel Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom in the studio. Mark is in Ashland. I renamed Ed Perkins to Ed Ashland there, who lives in Ashland, but he's Ed Perkins, a contributing columnist for a Smarter Traveler. Ed, have you ever been pickpocketed while on the road?
Yes, once.
Where were you?
In the subway in Prague, Czechoslovakia.
A definitely a hot spot. Prague, yep. Czechoslovakia, the Prague is a hot spot. How did it happen? What did you learn?
Just a real crowded subway car and people jostling against you, and
sure,
you just simply aren't aware you're being touched all over so much that you don't notice the little extra touch.
Sometimes can be a good thing, but in this case, not so much.
Not so much.
What would you tell people, Ed? It's a summer season. A lot of people are in crowds. How do you avoid losing your valuables to somebody who is stalking you?
Well, the first thing you do have to remember is that normally the way they're going to get you is either by bumping into you, like in the subway or in a line, or by distracting your attention, by trying to sell you something on the street and shoving it in front of your face to the point where you don't notice the fact that some associate is working around your pocket. So what you need to make sure to do as best you can is to keep your personal space. Try not to get into a situation where either you're distracted or where you're just that close to people. Another distraction thing, oftentimes they work in teams and somebody will spill something on you and then, oh, let me help. And while you're trying to dry off your clothes or pick up what was left on the floor, somebody else comes in and removes something.
I've heard that you can distract somebody the easiest by touching them.
Yes.
So if you touch somebody's body, like you said, helping you clean something off your body, you wouldn't notice that somebody else was touching you, perhaps somewhere else.
That's right. But the overall, what you need to do is, for prevention, everybody says, and this is true, that your best approach is some kind of money belt, something that keeps your valuables under several layers of clothing, where it's almost impossible for anybody to insert their hand. Failing that, I mean, if you're a man, wear a shirt or a jacket or something that covers your pants pockets by at least 6 or 7 inches, so that in order to get at the pocket, somebody has to lift your shirt.
I have to ask both of you guys, do you carry your wallet in your back pocket or your front pocket?
Front pocket.
I think that's probably one of the smartest things you can do right there is too many, a lot of people, men particularly, well, use that back pocket. The easiest place to get it. A front pocket would, to me, seem to be like a lot harder place to for someone to pilfer you.
Always tell folks also when you're traveling, keep one credit card somewhere differently from where you keep all the rest of them.
That's right. And keep a paper record or in some electronic device of all the numbers on your credit cards and so on. So if anything happens, you can call immediately and say, that card was stolen, cancel any further transactions, and send me a new card. And the other thing, just talking about the front pocket, some people recommend, if you're really concerned, roll up a sock and put that in your pocket on top of your wallet.
How
great
interesting.
Idea.
That's what an interesting idea. Ed Perkins with some ideas here to help prevent you from getting pickpocketed when you're on the road. Ed, we're starting to run up against the clock here. Got a little business to take care of. Is there any final comments before we sign off from you here, sir?
I don't think so. I mean, regardless of all the problems, traveling is still great. And I just urge people to be careful, but don't stay home.
Good for you, Ed.
Good for you. Good for you. And that's 86 you are, Ed?
86.
86-year-old Ed Perkins telling you not to stay at home. So, Tom, we have had a really good afternoon up here. We have one little piece of business here. If I don't do this, I will get in trouble. The Travel Guys winner for today is our jackpot is up to $300 now. Bev Budig, B-U-D-I-G. Bev Budig is our winner today. Call Sports Leisure Vacations Monday or Tuesday before 4:30 to claim your $300 prize. So, Thomas, we are at the end of the road, I think, here.
What favorite snack do you take on board? Are you like Ed, you're going to wait until you arrive, and then especially where you're going, you're going to get those fresh berries, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, I'm a berry freak. That's well known, and I am traveling home with huckleberries with me this weekend. However, my favorite snack on an airplane is a Tootsie Roll Pop.
Interesting. Okay. And you just kind of like, yeah, all right. I was, if you go to travelguysradio.com, there's a little spot where you can drill in and take a look at what people's favorite snacks are. One of the ones that is pictured is celery and carrots. And if I ever get stuck sitting next to somebody eating celery and carrots,
if the guy who opened the tuna salad last week on the plane is listening, please don't take tuna on an airplane.
Well,
Lord.
Yeah, there you go. Or for that matter, an egg sandwich.
Hey, next week, Tom, we are going to have a really special guest on this program. We have a lady who has written a book about a book that was done for black travelers on Route 66. It's called The Green Book. And it was meant to help black travelers stay out of trouble on the old highway, something I had never really given a lot of thought about. She is a fascinating lady. I know it is going to be a tremendous interview. That's next Sunday on the Travel Guys.